Hello, everybody. Welcome back to the show. Today, I'm with Peter again. Hello, Peter.
Hey, Daniel.
We have been visiting several topics, and we started discussing some of my thoughts in recent writings that I've been doing on kind of the state of the society here in the United States and around the world, as far as I've been able to talk to a few other people from various continents. And the thread seems quite similar, unfortunately. It doesn't matter if you're in Ghana or the Middle East or Southeast Asia or here in the good old United States. What Peter and I had been discussing, again, over the past few weeks, there's some common themes, and I really want to expand on those themes for the next few weeks. And as we do so, I hope to elucidate a little brighter, if you will, the entire state that we find ourselves in right now. And this is, it's been difficult for me because I don't want to see what we have and what we've worked, what our forefathers have worked for, what we've lived through, all the things that we have to be grateful for. I don't want to see them lost to the malevolence that exists all around us that we're sometimes blind to. So, starting with that, I want to come back to one of the things that I mentioned in the most recent episodes. My view of where we're at from a societal perspective is that our culture is dying and we need a unifying vision to pull us from the past into the present. Our culture is dead. It's immobile, right? The generations, the things that worked in the past won't necessarily work anymore. We have to change how we view things. We have to be willing to reconcile and reassimilate social structures and policies and make an environment that's conducive for the average person living and working in the United States of America in this day and age. And that's easier said than done. And the first thing that we need to do is we need to identify the root cause, right? I think the root cause for us is simply that our leadership has known a certain way of existing and operating, and it's worked for some period of time, but some simple statistical analysis of freely available data can show you how far diverged we are from the times of old, if you will, from the mid to late 80s up until present day. And it doesn't paint a very good picture for the average person. There are plenty of people that have been successful and continue to be successful in our country. But the reality of the situation is that the middle class is getting squeezed out significantly, that people who live in near poverty are, you know, even though it's much better to live in poverty in the United States than it is in, say, India, undoubtedly. But there's a lot more that we can be doing. And it's not about how we approach those problems. First, again, is we need to identify what's going on. So I think the first thing that comes to mind is we've lost the ability to communicate with each other effectively. We cannot communicate with each other effectively. And I don't mean you and your friend. If you're listening here, I mean the common person in this country, the common person who has a differing of opinion with someone else. You know, we come to the point to where the information flows are very, very biased. The social media feeds have negatively affected this, and it's not just in this country. And remember, that's how they make their money, right? To capture our attention. The fascinating thing about attention is we'll gladly pay other people to take our own attention away from us, right? And the same advertisers and everybody else who's participating in these platforms will gladly pay to capture your attention for hours on end. Our social bonds, I think, are lacking. That's part of the communication, right? So I think there's a lot of intentional misrepresentation of what happens in the media It fuels narratives. It's very easy. We have a lot of, even now with the AI generation, there's a lot of deep fakes that are going on. I mean, we had the Taylor Swift thing that happened the other day. If that's not blatantly obvious, I'm not sure what is, right? So, I mean, this is I'm putting a broad spectrum here for the introduction. And Peter, I would ask you, like, let's grab onto one of these things and start running with it, because there's a lot of, then there's a lot more we're going to add to this, undoubtedly. But for me, it comes back to trying, we need to reunify our society forward in into the next generation. If we don't, we're going to have massive problems, like massive, like very, very large. I'm not going to say revolutionary problems, but we're going to have, like, the way of life for the average person will be vastly different in 5 to 6 years than it was over the past 30 or 40. And I don't necessarily think in a good way.
No, I agree wholeheartedly in what you're saying. I think there's three key things that came out of the intro here, right? Number one is that it is a malevolent agenda, right? This isn't simple greed. This isn't simple traditional political power nonsense, right? This is actually an anti-human agenda that's getting pushed by, evil people that are looking to benefit themselves at the expense of normal, everyday, your neighbor, my neighbor, salt of the earth type folks. How have they done it? They have made sure to institute stagnation, starting with the school systems, right? Kids at all levels are not being intellectually challenged at any of the school, public school in the country. And, the counter argument to that would be, well, we're dealing with a lot of other societal issues in the classroom and, we have to adapt to what we're, the hand that we're dealt and all that. Okay. I'll accept that to a degree, but, the practice of mainlining what formerly were special needs kids, I think is a disservice to both the special needs kids and the mainstream kids, right?
Absolutely.
So what's it end up doing? It ends up creating apathy, stagnation, institution of mediocrity, and a lack of desire to strive for the excellence, right? And if there's anybody that doubts that this is an overall malevolent agenda that's an attack on basic human values, I think the Taylor Swift incident this week with artificially generated porn that got hit on Twitter is something that people should pay attention to. This wasn't a prank. This wasn't somebody indulging in prurient interest. This was a test run for distributing absolute misinformation. And, we talked about this earlier in the day. I don't subscribe to anything off color on Twitter. I have an account. I don't post. All I follow is like mainline movies, games, stuff like that, right? Traditional nerd stuff, to be honest. Right. I got hit by this and I got irritated because I'm like, hey, I don't have an interest in this. Why is it showing up in my feed? And I had to trace it back to, 5 or 6 bot accounts that had, somehow found me through the guys that I were following that I am telling you are niche followers. This isn't like, Mr. Beast on YouTube that has, 20 million subscribers plus. No, all the stuff that I'm interested in has like maybe 2,000, 3,000, 4,000 subscribers.
Right.
But it was enough to build a profile and to start putting this stuff out on the feed, right? Okay. If they're doing it with something like this, which in the grand scheme of things, anybody with half a brain knows that these are inauthentic fakes, but they were well done inauthentic fakes. And if they're going to do it on something like this, what are they going to do when they want to start moving public opinion on issues that matter, like the war in Israel, the war in Ukraine, the war in the Gulf with the Yemen and the Houthis, where they want to hide the fact of the economic stagnation that's been going on in this country minimally for the last 20 years or probably more than that. It's too easy. And I think people have to really be suspect of all their information sources and the agenda that lies behind them. Because again, this isn't just money. This is attacking the fabric of society in the oldest, you know, play in the book of divide and conquer. And this is what I think we're living through in real time at a scale that has heretofore been unseen in human history, because at no point in recorded history, at least, have we been as connected as we are now.
Absolutely. And this is something that concerns me significantly. And you hit on multiple important things. And I know you have a couple other things that, you know, you wanted to highlight, but if you don't mind. So just to recap, I agree with everything you're saying. The Twitter thing, it happened to me, and I don't follow much of anything on Twitter. I read psychological journals. I post occasionally and, you know, comment on a few political things on occasion. And I think, and I even had some of it pop up in mine, and I'm like, what is this? Yeah. Like what is this degenerate nonsense? You know, like it's insane. There is a malevolent agenda, and I think that we shouldn't be ignorant to that. And it is the basic fabric of society is trying, it's attempted to, and it's a good enough job is being done right now to get us at each other's throats, I believe, at a level that hasn't happened at least ever. Yeah. And I was saying recorded history. Yeah. And why? And you make some great points. It's the economic stagnation. And I'm actually writing a report right now on economic development in this country over the past 30 years. And after doing my initial, statistical modeling last night, I can tell you it is not so great for the average person. And that's backed up with some conversations, and I know you've had them as well, and other people that we know. So it's not like the numbers don't have meaning here. And I'll be publishing on the website.
I think it's worth pausing to mention, you know, what we talked about and what you're writing up right now.
Yeah.
This isn't subjective op-ed type analysis. You actually took the Fed data that showed, you know, the official stats from the government, which are manipulated. And anybody who follows this knows that they are manipulated. But even with that caveat, it's inescapable that things went seriously off the rails in the early 90s in the U.S. Yes. And everybody has been wanting to pretend that, no, things are great. Look at the growth. Yeah, well, adjusted for inflation. And all of a sudden, you start to see the middle class wages haven't fundamentally changed in almost 40 years.
Yeah.
That's a problem. And why is that not getting brought up, especially now when, you know, like we were just talking about earlier, you know, before we started the show?
Yeah,
you know, you go to sub shop to get a sandwich. It's $20, right?
Right.
Okay, I get it. You know, like we discussed, people have to make a living, and, you know, counter help can't be paid $5 an hour, right? That's unrealistic. But really, you're telling me that, you know, things are so out of control that it has to get to this level, to the point where I talked to my brother, and he says, yeah, you know, it seems like $30 is the magic number. I go, what do you mean? He goes, yeah, I bought toilet paper and napkins, $30 a piece, $60. I've got cat food, $30 for the cat. And I'm like, are you serious? He goes, yeah. It's like I almost know exactly how much to bring now, because no matter what I get, it's $30. I was kind of floored, but when I thought about it, I'm like, oh man, he's right. It really is $30 for everything, you know?
Yeah, that's it reminds me of an old joke we had when I was growing up in Houston, and it was that it took an hour to get everywhere in Houston. It didn't matter if it was 5 minutes down the road or 30 miles away, right? It took an hour. I would rather that than the $30 for toilet paper, though. I can, you know, but anyway.
You know, I mean, how much can it
cost? It's kind of an interesting thing, though, right? If you think about it, I mean, the production cost of toilet paper has not gone up.
It's constant. It's the same machines getting fed the same stock that it always has been. And now all of a sudden it you know, mushrooms in its the cost. And
post-pandemic, man. Post-pandemic,
well,
yeah.
You know, everybody then gets in front and says, well, you know, we're getting inflation under control. No, we're not. Stop lying. Stop your filthy lies.
Yeah, the adjusted CPI to median income is about 47 points off an index scale. So just for those of you who aren't, you know, statisticians, that we can just refer to that as terrible for affordability in the United States. And it's not getting better. And again, I'll publish all of this within the next 7 to 10 days. I'll post a link in the episode once it's ready. The other thing here, you talked about the school system, and there is apathy and there is stagnation, but it's on us if we want to remain relevant. And we talked about this, and it was one of our most followed episodes, most viewed episodes, was education for the real world.
Real world, yeah,
yeah. And I mean, it way more listens on that episode than we have any other. And apparently we struck a chord there. And I think for a reason, because it's the dead truth. There's a lot to be done. And if anybody hasn't heard that one, I would recommend you go back and listen. I don't want to rehash it here. You know, within the economic stagnation is real. You know, we're talking about that. And you hit on another point too. It's the fabric of society, mm-hmm. right? The people who want to continue to pull the control away up to themselves. It's almost like we live in a facade, of an oligarchy, ultimately. And it shouldn't be terribly surprising if you sit down and think about that. And the more I've looked into it, the more I've kind of had my eyes opened, I would say. And again, I'm not looking at it by reading what people are publishing. I'm going out and pulling the data myself from sources from all over the world that are reputable and building this. And it's slightly disheartening and also at the same time not surprising when we reconcile the proclivity for human nature, for example, to achieve things like greed. And that's something that we collectively need to figure out, I believe. Now, I would ask you, Peter, of the other things that we had spoken about, what was your number two?
I think it goes back to what we talked about in the last episode, the search for authenticity and the insincerity that's blanking it or masking it. There are people at all levels of whatever institutions we want to talk about, at all points on the political spectrum that agree with what we're saying. You know, they may differ in the details, but I think broadly all sane, rational people have some similar feelings to what we've expressed.
Sure.
Sadly, they get drowned out either by institutional inertia, institutional malevolence, or, you know, just certain societal problems that get in the way. And I'm thinking, you know, around work and school, you know, mostly because it just seems like, you know, New Year, laying out everything, you know, what I hope to accomplish and all that. I have it a lot on my mind.
Sure.
Here in, you know, Massachusetts, where I live, you know, one of the major cities is going through a school teacher strike, right? I mean, you know, great, middle of January, and you guys decide to strike in a very affluent city. So, you know, you want to whine that you want to go ahead and do things for the kids, but you're going to walk out in the middle of the school year, especially hiding the fact that your overall enrollment is down because people are pulling their kids from the public schools due to this nonsense and the continued understanding and revelations of how agendas got in the way of education during the pandemic lockdown. You know, people are wising up, but again, it's the people who have the means and financial wherewithal to do something about it, you know, and voting with their feet, essentially, right?
Right.
What happens if you don't? And, you know, you're stuck because you can't afford to do anything different. And the same thing applies to, you know, moving around, right? This is what I've seen in a lot of what I would consider secondary markets in the area, real estate markets. The housing prices are still ridiculous. And, you know, what they want
Yes, they are.
Yeah. I mean, what they want to get for a house that needs substantial work, is outdated, needs repairs, updating, and all that. There's a massive disconnect, especially when we remember we're looking at 8% mortgages now, 7%, whatever it is. You know, 500 grand on, you know, 4% is not 500 grand on 7%, right? No. Substantial difference in your monthly obligation to the banker overlords. But people are doing it because they want to move to better school districts. And, you know, cost be damned, we'll find a way to do it, because it's cheaper for me to pay the increased mortgage than it is to come up with the payment for my current mortgage and private school. A lot of people are making these calculations, and it's very disruptive. It's, you know, not good for the kids necessarily. I mean, you know, individual circumstances vary, but this is what's going on. And again, the only people who can do this are the people who are above the median income line that, you know, you and I were talking about in the Fed reports that we saw. I mean, inflation adjusted, it's still 65,000 a year in America, which again is not a lot of money, especially if you're talking a family of, you know, 3, 4, 5 people, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It, outside of being single, it's not a lot in this country.
Right. Yeah.
And, you know, I think we have some work to do.
Yeah. And I think this is where people can start, you know, affecting change, but it's got to be at the grassroots level where, you know, go to your school committee meetings. This is something that's coming up a lot too. There's a lot of, or not the school committee, but your town meetings, or whatever form your local government is. Cause in our town, you know, this is something that's come up, and, people don't agree with some of the questionable expenditures that the local government has been, doing, you know, for various public works projects. Some, you know, you could probably discuss in terms of differing ideas of what it should be. Okay. Others, it seems like they're spending money just to spend money, and there's no consideration or repercussion, because up until now they got away with it. People were skating under the radar, so to speak. But again, post COVID, people are a lot more clued into what's happening. And I think they're really starting to mobilize. And all right, if you can do that at your town level, next step is doing it at your city level, at your state level, and ultimately at the federal level, to try and get the message through that business as usual is not acceptable. Collectively, they've been lying to us at all levels of all institutions for a long time. And, you know, the double-edged sword of internet social media is that now people know about it, whereas before, maybe it wasn't so obvious unless you were a policy wonk and you knew where to look for this kind of data.
Exactly. Exactly. Like, you know where to look. And I was actually thinking about this earlier while I was driving. It's like, there's so much going on. There's so many distractions going on right now in the media. And it's like the whole border situation. It's like, why is this even a thing? Right? Like, this should not even be a thing. This should be there's a process for asylum seeking in the United States of America. Yeah, there's a process for immigration. Follow it. If you don't follow it, I'm sorry. This is not even a big deal. And when you really break it down like that, it's like, if I showed up to the country club in Shaniqua, Wisconsin, okay, and I'm not a member, they're going to tell me, see you later. Yeah. And I'm not a member, for the record. But you know what I mean? It's very simple. And yet that's expected, right? Like, why is that expected? I guess I'm too reasonable. Club, right. Right. Right, right. It's like, you know, it's this little private. We're a very accessible private club that you can be born into.
Yeah,
you know, that's interesting. But anyway, that's a whole other thread. But the point that I'm making is, there's so much in the media right now about border this, border that. Mm-hmm. All right. So what are we actually detracting from? And what I was thinking about was, what are we actually detracting from? On the way home, it's like you said, you got to be like a policy jockey, right? Like, watching this stuff, or know the media sources, private or otherwise, that are reputable, that you can trust on certain types of information, because they built those relationships and they know where to look. And then that becomes valuable.
Yeah.
Right. But you have to be paying attention. And this is why I always say that, because when we're not paying attention, when we're paying it, we might be paying attention, like, oh, I'm paying attention to the border. It's like, why?
Yeah.
Right. Like it's the biggest distraction I've seen. And we're doing it in an election year with an 81-year-old Alzheimer's president. Right. And a repeat of Trump potentially. So like, why do we need a bigger distraction than what's already going on? You know what I mean?
And, you know, again, like the hard conversation that needs to happen, you know, the U.S. is not the U.S. of 75 years ago where we could absorb, you know, unskilled labor that comes across, right? It doesn't work like that anymore. There's only so many unskilled labor jobs that exist. The economy has fundamentally changed in that period. And in light of what's going to happen with artificial intelligence, machine learning, people are willfully ignorant as to how much it's going to change and how quickly it's going to change in the coming, I'd say, 2, 3, 4 years, somewhere in that period,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So, you know, you need skilled labor coming in, not unskilled. And, you know, if you're unskilled, okay, there's a place too, but there's a process that you're going to have to follow and wait your turn to, you know, get your chance to come through. That's the way it is. I think, again, this is an agenda, because if you flood key cities with, you know, these people who have nowhere else to go, then you're distracted with the basic human concerns of making sure they don't freeze to death here in, you know, the Northeast or the northern part of the country, that they have, you know, adequate food, that, you know, somebody's taking care of them medically, all that stuff. You know, all the things that we take for granted have to be done above and beyond for these people who just showed up unanticipated, right? And it's a convenient chaos factor. Again, all too suspiciously happening in a super contentious election year.
Right. When we already have a huge stream of conflict globally, and right. We have a tremendous amount of disinformation and misinformation, and we can't communicate with each other because we're so polarized about whether or not a fence should be in place that we can't have a conversation. What does that say about the state of our existence right now?
But again, to pick up the theme of lack of communication, right? This, you know, current wave of immigrants, they're coming from all over the world. Okay. It isn't, you know, a particular country where, you know, like maybe it was in, you know, the early 90s with NAFTA and all that routine when they were coming from Central and South America. Largely, almost everybody spoke Spanish. So, okay, there was a way to accommodate the language requirements of this, right? Right. Well, now we've got people coming, you know, from South and Central America. They continue. They're coming from the Middle East. They're coming from Central Asia. They're coming from Haiti, you know, different places. How many separate infrastructures are we going to have to set up so that we can communicate with these people to see, hey, you know, what can we do to get you settled? What's your situation? You know, let's get you, you know, clued into how things are done here in the U.S.
Right.
It's almost an insurmountable problem. And I think it's done by design because, again, it's a distraction because we will always have well-meaning people that want to, you know, help somebody in need. And if you know, focused on that, then you're not focused on all the other stuff that's going on at local, state, national politics, where they're undermining right. The very fabric that attracted the fabric of society that attracted these people to, you know, take the risks to come here in the first place. Right.
Absolutely. And the foundation of which it stands, these possibilities. And we talked about this in the last episode. It saddens me that's the state that we're in, because we can be so much more than that. Like, doubtless we can be exceedingly more than that. So it doesn't discourage me, but it means that we need to act. We need to act in an intelligent and cohesive manner.
Well, see, and you know? This is the kind of discussion that has to happen intelligently and, you know, with full consciousness of what's going on, because what somebody can instantly say, oh, well, you know, you're a racist, you're anti-immigrant, you're this, you're that. No, I didn't say that any of these people shouldn't come here. I said there should be a process that everybody follows so that we can smoothly integrate them into our society. And this is, I think, maybe a fundamental difference of the bad actors in all of this is that they don't value our society. They don't value our culture. And, correct. You know, by the way, the same thing's happening in Europe with, you know, Germany and France and the UK and the whole bit. It's the same routine. It's the same playbook that is aimed to destabilize and instill chaos rather than, you know, strengthen, integrate, and build, right? All that stuff's harder. It requires harder discussions. And, you know, nobody wants to have a nuanced adult discourse on exactly what needs to happen for this.
So, you know, I'm with you. The immigration is simple. This should not be a huge deal. I mean, we are, a lot of us are humanitarianly focused in some way, shape, or form. I mean, I know I am. I love to help out and help people. But it's not something that can be done. There are resource limitations.
Right.
And there are other constraints, right? And we have to be realistic about what we can take in. There's also the question of assimilation, right? If we can't effectively...
That's the crux of the matter. It's the assimilation.
And it doesn't mean that it's impossible.
No.
But if you come to this country and you don't speak a lick of English, the chances are that your kids will go to school here and then the second generation will be better than the first. And that's kind of the historical precedence of our country for immigrants, right? And that's great. That means if I work, that my family can have a future here. I mean, like, you don't have that many places in the world, and that's why people want to come here.
Yeah, I get it. You know, and I'd be the biggest hypocrite if I didn't support it because that's my story, right? So there's a constructive way, but again, it's all about becoming part of the culture, not being the agent to destroy it at the hands of, you know, people who don't have anybody's best interest at heart and
are
just seeking their own self-serving interests.
It's like thinking of our society here in the United States as an entire body, whereas certain groups of people want to make it their own body.
True.
As to where we should all be parts of the same. Yeah. And I think that might help some people visualize it. At least that's how I visualize it sometimes. You talked about something just a second ago that there's no value of our culture. I think part of it's back to the original point that I opened up with. It's because they don't see a way in this. You know, people are viewing it as ultra oppressive or whatever it may be, and their perception is ill formed, as far as I'm concerned. I'm not saying that people don't have grievances. Certainly, they probably should. But there's an intelligent way to go about the resolution.
100%.
Right? The first thing that we need to do is we need to come together and be able to have communication with each other.
Right.
Right? We need to stop paying attention to all the perceived crazy things that are going on around us all the time on social media and the media generally, and do our own understanding. And the problem is, you know, like, we're all adults probably, you know? So, okay. Yeah, I know that. I mean, I'll be 100% honest. I signed up for Twitter 2 weeks ago because I was informed that I needed to. And I spent a couple hours on Twitter and I wasn't sure what was real anymore.
Yeah. The same. I only have the account again because I had a specific requirement for something I was doing to do it. Other than that, I had no interest in it.
Yeah. And I'm just all kinds of propaganda on there. It's blatantly obvious. But I'm like, do people believe this? And the answer is clearly.
Yeah, they do.
So, okay, then how did we get there? You know, like I want to understand that. That's been a thought in the back of my mind for weeks.
So I think it comes from the message that multiple generations of our youth have been bombarded with, where there is no absolute truth. Everything is relative, right? And that's true for certain things, but not everything. There is an absolute truth of what is right and wrong, right? And by telling everybody for, you know, 25, 30 years, no, that's not true. You know, it varies from person to person. Yeah. matters of taste do, but certain fundamental truths of the human condition are amazingly consistent across space, time, and culture. And I would hazard if you went to the oldest literature in India and compared it to the oldest literature in Europe or Africa or, you know, Japan, China, whatever, it would have remarkably similar themes about what it means to be a human being. And, you know, okay, how that is expressed in any given point in time and place. Yeah, okay, that's going to be different, sure. But the fundamentals are the same. And this whole moral relativism that has poisoned the Western world, not just America, but the Western world.
Absolutely, yes.
Has been doing so since probably, I don't know, 70s maybe. And people just take it for granted that, there's absolutely nothing. It's all ephemeral. It's all relevant. You know, so who are you to judge? Well, I know what's right and I know what's wrong. And, you know, to cause dissension is never honorably done, right? And, dissension arises right. Naturally, and you can address it by, you know, rational conversation. We're human beings, for crying out loud. We're not animals.
So your point there on moral relativism, I agree 100%. That's the postmodernistic leanings of our generation. Yeah. I agree wholeheartedly. That's a completely another episode. What I think we could tie back to the conversation, though, is these things are happening for a reason.
Yeah.
Okay. So these things get put together in the way they're all responses. It's almost, go back to the body analogy, it's like a physiological response to something that's been happening within the body of our work, if you will, of our existence as a society.
Yeah, and it's survival stimulus, right? It's somebody manipulating you to be constantly off guard and hitting you from different angles so that you're always in a fight or flight mode and you have a fear-based reaction to everything rather than pausing to say, no, I am not going to be, you know, somebody's pet monkey dancing at the end of a rope, begging for, you know, pennies in a cup like the old days, right? No, that we're human beings. That's not acceptable.
I immediately think of the notifications that come up on the old telephone. Perfect. Or other devices, yeah. Right?
Perfect example.
You know, it's like we're a slave to our own to our own creation. We are slaves.
Yeah. To the surveillance device that we've all willingly accepted. I mean, it's surreal. Like I remember this, last year I went for my annual physical and I'm sitting there talking to the doctor. My phone goes off and he's like, do you want to get that? I said, no, you know, I'm here talking to you. Whoever that is can wait. That's why we have voicemail. But I said, do people do that? He's like, yeah, man, you know, they're just conditioned like Pavlov's dog. As soon as the phone rings, they pick it up and they start talking without even thinking. And I let it go, but I'm thinking, oh my God, what happens if you're in there getting some horrible diagnosis? The phone goes off and you're like, wait a minute, doc. Yeah. Tell me about my cancer treatment. I got to, you know, answer this Twitter notification that I just got.
I'm laughing, but it is kind of not good. Right. Yeah. So it goes back. We can't communicate with each other. You know, it's like,
right.
Well, we communicate on the internet. I'll communicate with, like, let me go find a group of people who agree with me, and we'll just spread all this, you know, confirmation biased information amongst ourselves.
Yeah, $1 trillion echo chamber.
Exactly. Yeah, $1 trillion echo chamber. Think about that. Yeah. It's insane to me what we have created in that way. And I was thinking about it. Let's think, it's like we live in the information age. We could have anything. We could have all kinds of knowledge is accessible at the fingertips, and we just let it, we don't even let it rot away. Like it's actively done.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. Again, to capture and control the attention.
We talked about in one of the earlier episodes, it's designed into all of these platforms by choice, right? How can you filter? How can you effectively search? How can you manage the fire hose to give you information out of the data? It's not there. It's not there. Or if it is, it's a third party thing that you got to pay for. So what's the point of it all?
Yeah. Well, it's for me from news, like I'll gladly pay $4, $5, $8 a month for a subscription to an independent service that I find reputable. And that's what I do, you know? And it's helpful. It's helpful to disseminate truth, actually, out of all the noise.
Well, I think it's helpful for you to discern truth.
Yeah.
Out of the filtered noise, right?
That's a better way to put it. Yes. Yeah. I think when we look at this, and I know we just talked about many things, but you know, they all come together. So with lack of the communication, we need to start figuring out how we can fix that.
Yeah.
Right? To me, it always comes down to something quite simple. I will talk to anybody.
Yeah.
Honestly. And you know that probably of me. You've known me for a long time.
Yeah.
I enjoy it. I like to understand where people come from and their story, their life, what they've learned, what we can learn from each other, right? But if we let our hatred overcome us, right, then we have vilified or demonized an opposing party as such that they're not human. Well, then we're not going to be willing to talk to them.
But this is the key to, I think, the whole problem, in that people have to stop being conditioned to respond based on triggers that have been implanted in them, mm-hmm. and be willing to, you know, just talk to people, and, you know, meet them as they are, where they are. I'm thinking of, you know, one time I was involved with a charity that was a medical issue. And, you know, one of the doctors who was very, very prominent in his field, you know, we're talking. I said, oh, you know, I noticed you were late today. Where were you? I was at the free clinic. I said, oh, you, I didn't know you volunteered there. And, you know, this guy is like head of department. He's published. He's a big name. And he said, yeah, I like doing it because, you know, these people need, you know, medical care too. I said, sure. Okay. Yeah, I get it. Real doctor, you know? And he says, you know, and it always struck me where he speaking now would say, you know, I'll be talking to somebody who's living on the street who is typically ignored, marginalized. Nobody even thinks of him as a human being. And I can see the look on his face when I actually listen to him and just give him simple treatment to alleviate, like, you know, an infected cut on his foot or something like that. And he said, it gives me great feeling because I look at that and I say, hey, I can help this guy. I can fix this and it's going to make him happy. But it's getting to that point where he could interact with somebody at a true level without all of the layers of nonsense that, you know, all health providers have to go through in terms of administration, insurance, and all this other nonsense that
right.
we know about.
Overhead.
And I think it just goes to, you know, what you just said, where here was a super accomplished, you know, man of science that had, you know, 30, 40 years at that time. And here he was, what made him happy? Being able to connect with somebody else at a human level to be able to help him in a meaningful way. And, you know, he said, you know, these guys smell bad. They look bad. You know, a lot of them are angry because they're off their meds and all that thing. But if you understand that and you just talk to them, you get past that and you can see the response to them at a human level.
Right? Yeah. You can see the humanity. Not everybody has the same opportunity.
Yeah. You know? And I think that's part of the problem is that just generally in Western, you know, world, we've had it very easy for very long. And we don't have to interact with things that we find unpleasant if we don't want to. And, you know, the stereotypical Karen that, you know, we all make fun of, that's it in a nutshell, right? Some self-entitled, you know, idiot who lives in a bubble has meltdowns, you know, or the male equivalent of the Kevin, as they say, right? You know, because something was unpleasant for them to deal with. Well, that's called life. So, you know, how about you deal with the unpleasantness like a rational human being and it won't be that unpleasant. We all have problems we have to overcome, some bigger than others.
Yeah, indeed. It's like westernized princess syndrome, right?
Yeah, totally. That's the best description.
One thing before we close the episode, you had said something a few minutes ago about being conditioned to respond.
Yeah, like Pavlov's dogs.
That is exactly the problem with social media. And I had to stop myself from doing it the other day. Right. I'm not immune to it either, right? But I have to stop and I have to look. And it's like, is it better to get caught up in this conversation right now? Or is it better to find the root of the problem and go after that? Yeah. Right? And I decided to go after the root of the problem instead.
Right.
But that wasn't easy. And if it can happen to me, I'm just a human being. I'd imagine it can happen to you and it can happen to anybody else that's listening.
Of course it happens to everybody because, you know, we as individuals are up against, you know what, hundreds of thousands of people that have worked on these platforms from all, you know, walks of life, whether they're neuroscientists or interface designers or the whole thing. You have thousands upon thousands of collective years of effort put into these things to make sure that as soon as you see that notification bell light up, you start salivating and say, hey, where's my dinner? Just like, you know, Pavlov's pups.
It's completely a conditioned response. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's not happening. Like the rats. We're the rats in the, in Skinner's experiments here. So yeah. I want to stop here because there are many other things that we're going to pull out of this and continue on a thread and into the next few episodes. I want to say thank you to everybody for listening. If you have thoughts on anything that we've discussed, you can reach out to us through social media. It's always in the links here. If you have questions you'd like us to discuss or particular topics, feel free to reach out in the same manner, always in the episode show notes. And until next time, thank you very much for listening. Peter, thank you as always.
Thank you, Daniel. Good night, everyone.
We hope you have enjoyed this episode. Subscribe now to be notified of future episodes and check out our website at theallunknowing.com.